Okay, we're going to just keep looking at some of the teachings from the Sanyutta and the Khanda Sanyutta. It's just chock full of all sorts of things, so got a few more to go next 4 or 5 days. Moving along with the themes of the three characteristics, looking at the three characteristics in relation to the khandhas. This one is number 102 of the Khanda Sanyutta, titled Perception of Impermanence. At Sawati, bhikkhus, when the perception of impermanence is developed and cultivated, it eliminates all sensual lust, it eliminates all lust for existence, it eliminates all ignorance, it uproots all conceit, I am. Just as bhikkhus, in the autumn, a plowman plowing with a great plowshare cuts through all the rootlets as he plows, so too, when the perception of impermanence is developed and cultivated, it eliminates all sensual lust, it eliminates all lust for existence, it eliminates all ignorance, it uproots all conceit, I am. Just as bhikkhus, a rush cutter, would cut down a rush, grab it by the top, and shake it down, and shake it out, and thump it about, so too, when the perception of impermanence is developed and cultivated, it eliminates all sensual lust, it eliminates all lust for existence, it eliminates all ignorance, it uproots all conceit, I am. Just as bhikkhus, when the stalk of a bunch of mangoes has been cut, all the mangoes attached to the stalk follow along with it, so too, when the perception of impermanence is developed, it eliminates all sensual lust, it eliminates all lust for existence, it eliminates all ignorance, it uproots all conceit, I am. Just as bhikkhus, all the rafters of a house with a peaked roof lead to the roof peak, slope towards the roof peak and converge upon the roof peak, and the roof peak is declared to be their chief, so too, when the perception of impermanence is developed, it uproots all conceit, I am. Just as bhikkhus, among fragrant roots, black orris is declared to be their chief, so too, when the perception of impermanence is developed, it uproots all conceit, I am. Just as bhikkhus, among fragrant heartwoods, red sandalwood is declared to be their chief, so too, when the perception of impermanence is developed, it uproots all conceit, I am. Just as bhikkhus, among fragrant flowers, jasmine is declared to be their chief, so too, when the perception of impermanence is developed, it uproots all conceit, I am. Just as bhikkhus, all petty princes are the vassals of a wheel-turning monarch, and the wheel-turning monarch is declared to be their chief, so too, when the perception of impermanence is developed, it uproots all conceit, I am. Just as bhikkhus, the radiance of all the stars does not amount to a 1/16th part of the radiance of the moon, and the radiance of the moon is declared to be their chief, so too, when the perception of impermanence is developed, it uproots all conceit, I am. Just as bhikkhus, in the autumn, when the sun is clear and cloudless, the sun, ascending in the sky, dispels all darkness from space as it shines and beams and radiates, so too, when the perception of impermanence is developed and cultivated, it eliminates all sensual lust, it eliminates all lust for existence, it eliminates all ignorance, it uproots all conceit, I am. And how, bhikkhus, is the perception of impermanence developed and cultivated so that it eliminates all sensual lust, eliminates all lust for existence, eliminates all ignorance, and uproots all conceit, I am? Such is form, such its origin, such its passing away. Such is feeling, such its origin, such its passing away. Such is perception, such its origin, such its passing away. Such are volitional formations, such their origin, such their passing away. Such is consciousness, such its origin, such its passing away. That is how the perception of impermanence is developed and cultivated, so that it eliminates all sensual lust, eliminates all lust for existence, eliminates all ignorance, and uproots all conceit, I am. It's nice, it just really emphasizes that the way to develop the perception of impermanence is really seeing all of the khandhas individually just as they are, such is form, such is perception, such is feeling, and watching their arising and watch their passing away. I was thinking about that, and was contemplating that and the experience of doing that, and just how important that it takes a lot of patience and attention not to follow the impulses that come along with all sorts of perceptions and feelings and experiences, and that to really see the transience in, you know, not only, you know, the body, but also the transience of feelings, how quickly they arise and pass away, and perceptions, to really see that changing nature, that arising and passing away, there has to be a real close and very quiet attention to the experience itself right in the moment. Otherwise, you just get lost in that impulse to seek the pleasant or avoid the unpleasant, or just check out when it's neither. And it takes a real determination not to just follow the impulse and go in and satisfy the longing or run away from the painful. But when you can do that, when you really can be with something rather than following it and reacting to it, then it's, you know, it's a real deep insight into just how everything just passes away based on its own lifetime. Thoughts before we move on to the next one? Oh, I didn't see.
The passing away of the body, you know, that would be contemplating death. Mm-hmm. Do you have any suggestions for the origin? Would that be like contemplating pain of birth?
Sure, yeah, that certainly is one way of doing it. That's the origin of any particular body. And also just, it kind of runs into the experience of feeling and perceptions and the mental world too, but just watching the body right in the moment as it comes into awareness, you know. So when the attention shifts from some other focus to, say, when you pull yourself to the perception of the body, all of a sudden all the experience of the body in that moment comes into being. Comes into experience as well.
So I'm going to ask one more. If I'm in charge, focus on my name, did you ever hear him talk about it like as an exclusive focus for any bhikkhus? Like kind of like saying like a bhikkhu, oh no, this is what you should practice, this kind of focusing on your name all the time or something like that? Or was it just sort of like as it was helpful? As things came up,
neither.
It was neither. How did he use that?
He just taught them.
He was just in his thoughts.
Yes, I mean, trying to pin Ajahn Chah down and say being one way or the other, and that's not how. I mean, he just taught.
He just talked about.
He taught and encouraged people to develop it and contemplate it and investigate it. And work with it and use it to undermine greed, hatred, and delusion.
Okay. Moving on to the next one. This is the one well known to most folks, I think. It's number 95, called A Lump of Foam. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Ayodhya on the bank of the river Ganges. Then the Blessed One addressed the bhikkhus thus. Bhikkhus, suppose that this river Ganges was carrying along a great lump of foam. A man with good sight would inspect it, ponder it, and carefully investigate it. And it would appear to him to be void, hollow, insubstantial. For what substance could there be in a lump of foam? So too, bhikkhus, whatever kind of form there is, whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, A bhikkhu inspects it, ponders it, and carefully investigates it, and it would appear to him to be void, hollow, insubstantial. For what substance could there be in form? Suppose, bhikkhus, that in the autumn, when it is raining and big raindrops are falling, a water bubble arises and bursts on the surface of the water. A man with good sight would inspect it, ponder it, and carefully investigate it, and it would appear to him to be void, hollow, insubstantial. For what substance could there be in a water bubble? So too, bhikkhus, whatever kind of feeling there is, whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, a bhikkhu inspects it, ponders it, and carefully investigates it, and it would appear to him to be void, hollow, insubstantial. For what substance could there be in feeling? Suppose, bhikkhus, that in the last month of the hot season, at high noon, a shimmering mirage appears. A man with good sight would inspect it, ponder it, and carefully investigate it, and it would appear to him to be void, hollow, insubstantial. For what substance could there be in a mirage? So too, bhikkhus, whatever kind of perception there is, whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, a bhikkhu inspects it, ponders it, and carefully investigates it, and it would appear to him to be void, hollow, insubstantial. For what substance could there be in perception? Suppose, bhikkhus, that a man needing heartwood, seeking heartwood, wandering in search of heartwood, would take a sharp axe and enter a forest. There he would see the trunk of a large plantain tree, straight, fresh, without a fruit bud core. He would cut it down at the root, cut off the crown, and unroll the coil. As he unrolls the coil, he would not find even softwood, let alone heartwood. A man with good sight would inspect it, ponder it, and carefully investigate it, and it would appear to him to be void, hollow, insubstantial. For what substance could there be in the trunk of a plantain tree? So too, bhikkhus, whatever kind of volitional formations they are, whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, a bhikkhu inspects them, ponders them, and carefully investigates them. As he investigates them, they appear to him to be void, hollow, insubstantial. For what substance could there be in volitional formations? Suppose, bhikkhus, that a magician or a magician's apprentice would display a magical illusion at a crossroads. A man with good sight would inspect it, ponder it, and carefully investigate it, and it would appear to him to be void, hollow, insubstantial. For what substance could there be in a magical illusion? So too, bhikkhus, whatever kind of consciousness there is, whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, a bhikkhu inspects it, ponders it, and carefully investigates it, and it would appear to him to be void, hollow, insubstantial. For what substance could there be in consciousness? Seeing thus, bhikkhus, the instructed noble disciple experiences revulsion, or disenchantment, towards form, disenchantment towards feeling, disenchantment towards perception, disenchantment towards volitional formations, disenchantment towards consciousness. Experiencing disenchantment, he becomes dispassionate. Through dispassion, his mind is liberated. When it is liberated, there comes the knowledge. It is liberated. He understands, destroyed his birth, the holy life has been lived. What had to be done has been done. There is no more for this state of being. This is what the Blessed One said. Having said this, the Fortunate One, the teacher, further said this. Form is like a lump of foam, feeling like a water bubble. Perception is like a mirage. Volition is like a plantain trunk, and consciousness like an illusion. So explained the kinsman of the sun. However one may ponder it and carefully investigate it, it appears but hollow and void when one views it carefully. With reference to this body, the one of broad wisdom has taught that with the abandoning of three things, one sees this form discarded. When vitality, heat, and consciousness depart from the physical body, then it lies there cast away, food for others, without volition. such as this continuum, this illusion, beguiler of fools. It is taught to be a murderer. Here, no substance can be found. A bhikkhu with energy aroused should look upon the aggregates thus, whether by day or at night, comprehending, ever mindful. He should discard all the fetters and make a refuge for himself. Let him fare as with head ablaze, yearning for the imperishable state. So, it's a very beautiful set of similes. I'm going to read one of the notes from Bhikkhu Bodhi. I think it's an important point that he makes here. This sutta, he says here, this is Bhikkhu Bodhi's comments, this sutta is one of the most radical discourses on the empty nature of conditioned phenomena. Its imagery, especially the similes of the mirage and the magical illusion, has been taken up by later Buddhist thinkers, most persistently by the Madhyamikas. Some of the images are found elsewhere in the Pali Canon, for example, in the Dhammapada 46 and 170. In the context of early Buddhist thought, these similes have to be handled with care. They are not intended to suggest an illusionist view of the world, but to show that our conceptions of the world and of our own existence are largely distorted by the process of cognition. Just as the mirage and magical illusion are based on real existence, the sand of the desert, the magician's appurtenances, that word, so these false conceptions arise from a base that objectively exists, namely the five aggregates. But when seen through a mind subject to conceptual distortion, the aggregates appear in a way that deviates from their actual nature. Instead of being seen as transient and selfless, they appear as substantial and as a self. I think that's an important point because I remember once referring to this set of similes and someone, and you know, did ask that question. I think maybe in a Spirit Rock or somewhere, and they asked that question, you know, like, does that mean that, you know, nothing exists? So it's good to clarify that, but that's not what it's pointing to.
Do you think there's a special meaning about which simile is compared to which comment?
To me, yeah, I mean, it's sort of, I think so. I mean, the commentaries go into a huge amount of their own detail about, you know, how form is like foam and how feelings like a bubble and that kind of a thing, but and some of it, you know, is a little bit off as far as I can tell. But yeah, I mean, when you think about it, you know, like, you know, foam is something that, like, as it floats down the river, the Ganges River, it looks solid and real and substantial, you know, like a something really dense. But when you get up and look at it closely, you know, it's full of holes and air and it rapidly disintegrates. You know, and it's very similar with the human body. I mean, the human body is, you know, actually mostly water. And then when you think about it, I guess on a real level of physics, you know, all the space that's actually in between atoms and everything, so it's really, you know, pretty insubstantial, even in a material way. Of course, our experience is really solid, and that's the way it appears to us, but how rapidly it disintegrates when you say you see something decomposing, you know, just kind of really transmogrifies, changes. Feelings, you know, are so rapid, you know, like the feeling of pleasure and pain change so rapidly, just like, you know, bubbles in a puddle, you know, it's like they arise immediately, pop, they're gone, and then another one appears right after it, just all, you know, just constantly moving and changing in a rapid succession. Perceptions, like a mirage, you can see how, you know, you perceive something in one way, and you invest in it and you believe in it and you think that's the way it is, or say the way somebody is, you know, my perception of a certain person is that they are this kind of a person, somebody I like or dislike, or they have these qualities, and then something changes and all of a sudden that perception is gone and a completely new perception takes its place. So it is like a mirage. It fools you into thinking it's this way, but it's not. You know, mental formations, volitional formations. It's a little bit harder for me to see that, but you can, as you're examining them, you know, looking at them through investigation, by paying attention to them, you know, one by one, you see, you know, you peel them away. You're looking at them like you're looking for some sort of truth or substance or unchangeable reality in your, you know, the way your thoughts and emotions, they all seem so real and so, solid in a way. But as you really peel them away and look at them one by one, looking for some sort of coherent core, something that is truly, you know, the heartwood, say, of all of these thoughts and emotions, you know, you peel them back one by one and finally you reach the end of them and there's nothing left. You know, there's no substantial heart to all of these mental activities that one can say is me or mine or the volitions. In consciousness, just rapidly changing, say, through, you know, sight consciousness, then to hearing consciousness, then to tactile consciousness, then to all the other, the bases, mental consciousness, that kind of rapid change from one to another in sequence, all kind of meshing together in a blur to create a sense of reality, you know, weaving together all the different inputs from the sense bases to create this sense of continuity that looks substantial, that looks real. But when it slows down enough, it's like, you know, I think I was saying the other night, you know, as in motion picture, a movie, you know, if you stop the film going through the projector, just take one at a time, then that illusion of continuity just ceases, you know, when you break it down into discrete moments of consciousness, and which is, of course, something that, you know, only the people with incredible strong minds and concentration can really do, I think, to really see that clearly. But that like a magician's illusion, you know, it's sort of like creating an appearance that's not really the way it is. Sort of my take on it, anyway. Any other thoughts or comments on that sutta? Okay, one last quick one, just to kind of hammer it home. This one is number 33, called Not Yours. Atsavati. Bhikkhus, whatever is not yours, abandon it. When you have abandoned it, that will lead to your welfare and happiness. And what is it, bhikkhus, that is not yours? Form is not yours. Abandon it. When you have abandoned it, that will lead to your welfare and happiness. Feeling is not yours. Perception is not yours. Volitional formations are not yours. Consciousness is not yours. Abandon it. When you have abandoned it, it will lead to your welfare and happiness. Suppose, bhikkhus, people were to carry off the grass, sticks, branches, and foliage in this Jetas grove, or to burn them, or to do with them as they wish. Would you think, people are carrying us off, or burning us, or doing with us as they wish? No, venerable sir. For what reason? Because, venerable sir, that is neither ourself nor what belongs to ourself. So too, bhikkhus, form is not yours. Feeling is not yours. Perception is not yours. Volitional formations are not yours. Consciousness is not yours. Abandon it. When you have abandoned it, that will lead to your welfare and happiness.